Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Did you know that approximately 37 to 47% of all households in the U.S. have a dog? And 30 to 37% of households have a cat? That's 70 to 80 million dogs and 74 to 96 million cats total. Now, with all these companion animals in households and knowing the high divorce rate in the country, what happens to those animals when the family splits up, and especially if the divorce is not an amicable one? What does the law say about what happens to companion animals in divorce? To find out, I've been speaking with Philadelphia-based family law attorney Mark Momjian, and he is here with us today. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Dr. Lori.
Mark, so you had mentioned to me that the topic of divorce and domestic animals really should begin with the discussion about domestic violence and pets, which has really evolved in the past few decades. Tell us about that.
It certainly has. There is definitely a connection between animal abuse and domestic violence. The Virginia Attorney General's Office has estimated that 71% of survivors of domestic abuse own pets who were also abused. This link between domestic violence and animal abuse has been recognized in many states as diverse as California, Louisiana, Maine, and Iowa, all of which have statutes that specifically give protection to animals who are also victims of abuse.
Wow, it's interesting. The status of animals in the law has become elevated because of domestic abuse cases. So let's say for divorce cases where the couple is in general agreement about what to do with the dogs, cats, or other companion animals. What happens there, Mark?
In the overwhelming majority of cases, people who reach a written agreement about how they're going to deal with a domestic pet or a companion pet, most of the people simply abide by those terms. They don't need the court to intervene. There are, however, cases where parties reach an agreement. Most of the time it's written, but sometimes it's oral, and there's a breach of that agreement, and courts vary on whether or not they're going to hear those types of cases. Will they hear them as a breach of contract case? Will they hear them as, you know, a quasi-custody case? And depending on what jurisdiction you live in, the doors of justice will be open or closed. And unfortunately, we don't have uniformity across the country with regard to that.
Okay, so talk about the situation or situations in which the divorcing couple does not agree about who gets the dogs or cats. What happens then?
In those cases, most of the courts, unfortunately, treat pets like personal property. I know that sounds offensive. It's certainly offensive to me, and I'm sure it's offensive to you and many of your listeners. But the common law in the United States is that domestic pets, companion pets, are treated no different than other types of personal property. And courts, when dealing with separating or divorcing parties, have to assign that property to one party or another. Fortunately, Dr. Lori, the law is evolving, and we're seeing more states and more legislators open to the idea of having companion pets treated not like personal property, but in terms of their, what is in their well-being, what is in their best interest. There was a bill recently introduced in the Alaskan legislature just a couple of months ago that would invest a court with the power to consider the well-being of an animal in the context of a separating or divorcing couple.
What's the likelihood that will be passed?
Right now, we don't know. But, you know, there has to be a state that starts the process. And just like in marriage equality, one state, you know, passed marriage equality, eventually we're going to have a state like Alaska. If it's not Alaska, it's going to be another jurisdiction that takes the bold step of saying, these animals are not to be treated like tables and lamps.
Right.
They have to be treated as kinetic beings, sentient beings that deserve more attention than, you know, a couple fighting over pasta tongs. You know, I hate to be so blunt about it, but we don't think of animals like tables and lamps. We think of them as part of our family. And it's hard for me as a family lawyer with over 30 years of experience to see courts very coldly deal with companion animals in something other than what they really are, which is sentient beings.
So, Mark, are judges comfortable dealing with animal cases?
You know, I would say 30 years ago, most lawyers wouldn't even think about bringing an animal case before a court. But the good news, Dr. Laurie, is increasingly courts are looking at these issues, and they're looking at them very, very carefully. There was a decision in Vermont in 2014, a decision in New York in 2013, where judges looked at these cases and rendered very thoughtful, deliberate opinions on how we dispose of these disputes. And the good news is they looked very much, I think, toward a very progressive way of dealing with the consideration of the animal's welfare, as well as the emotional connection between the animal and each of the parties. I think that's the right direction. I think that is the direction that the law is going. And, you know, I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see more decisions like the ones in Vermont and New York.
Considering the well-being of the animals similar to the well-being of the children, human children?
Indeed. I mean, you know, we can't really, you know, when we're dividing personal property, we can all say, well, I have an emotional attachment to this painting, or I have an emotional attachment to this piece of jewelry because it came from my grandmother. But when we look at animals, it's not just the emotional attachment of the parties themselves. It's also what's best for the animal. So in the New York case that I referred to that was decided in 2013, the judge had to decide what to do with this miniature dachshund that was about 2.5 years old. And the judge said, I'm going to consider what's best for everyone. And I thought that was a really important development in the law. Not what's just best for the parties, but what's best for the pet.
You mentioned this bill in Alaska that they're considering that would take in consideration the well-being of the animals. If that passes, Mark, do you think that will set the ball rolling for other states?
I hope so. It's my belief that animal law is very different today than it was when I went to law school some 30 years ago. It's a rapidly developing specialty. And the good news, Dr. Laurie, is that lawmakers and lawyers and judges are looking at animal law not as a purely substantive area of law, but they're looking at it as part of a course category of social justice, public interest. And I noticed that a lot of your programs deal with ethically challenging issues. The reason why law students are so captivated by animal law is because it's intellectually stimulating, it's ethically challenging. And I think that once the first state passes a law that says we can consider the animal's well-being, I think that's going to be one of many cases to come, one of many jurisdictions to come. I'm very, very optimistic.
So let's consider most states and its current laws. Does it matter if one spouse brought the animal into the marriage?
Generally, it does, because a person's premarital property is ordinarily not subject to property division. And that's regarding an equitable distribution state like Pennsylvania, where I live, or a community property state such as California, where you live. They basically apply strict property application of the common law, which means that we're only going to divide the property that was acquired from the time of the marriage forward. So if someone brought a dog or cat into the marriage, ordinarily the common law would respect that party's right to keep that dog or cat because they brought it in to the marriage, or was owned. Again, I'm a little offended by that word, but it was owned prior to the marriage.
Yeah, very good. And how about children, Mark? Is there a tendency to place the animals where the kids are?
I think so. And I think, you know, judges who exercise best interest standards look at that. I think most people who are mature and try to deal with divorce and separation in a mature fashion want to have a custody arrangement or a physical sharing arrangement that promotes the children as well. So if the children are in an arrangement where there's an equally shared custody, in other words, they spend the same amount of time with the mother as they do with the father or the co-parents, those types of cases often invite a sharing of a dog so that the dog goes with the parent who has physical custody. I think a lot of people apply that common sense, and it's not just common sense, it's what's right for children, right? I mean, that's what makes sense.
Yes, and you, just for my listeners to know, you mentioned owned, and I'm very glad you mentioned that word. I know we're speaking about ownership here because it's we're talking about law, but like you, we prefer to use the term guardian versus an owner.
I can't agree with you more. I mean, when someone said to me, am I a dog owner, I'd probably say I'm not. I mean, we have a dog that's part of our family, and it's an integral part of our family. I don't like the use of the word owner or ownership in connection with animals. I think most pet lovers follow your and my judgment on that, that, you know, that we think that ownership is not the right classification. Unfortunately, the law today treats these types of disputes in terms of ownership, and I think that's something that we're trying to change. I think a lot of the law schools, certainly the major law schools in California, all have animal law seminars. I think that that's a really great development. 30 years ago, there were no such classes. I think that we're looking at that terminology and seeing how offensive it really is.
Philadelphia-based family law attorney Mark Momjian, thank you.
It's a pleasure, Dr. Lurie, and thank you for all your amazing advocacy.
Thank you, sir.
That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals Today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org.
Here's the problem. You're at the beach, you're at the party, you're at the patio, and it's boring. Solution? The Cool Max Cooler. Imagine this, a 40-quart cooler with wheels that holds up to 48 cans and advanced insulation technology that keeps the ice frozen for up to 3 days. You heard me right. It's got wheels. You can drag it along. Maybe you're tailgating. Maybe you're having a picnic, and get this. It has a 350-watt sound system in it, baby, with tweeters and woofers built right into the cooler. You heard me right. Bluetooth, USB, SD, any form of music, it plays for you. In fact, you can karaoke if you like with 350 watts of booming power. Not only that, maybe you got a guitar. It acts as your guitar amplifier too. You are a party in a box, baby. A party in a cooler, 48 cans. It's got all the bottles, 3 days of ice. And by the way, the battery lasts up to 16 hours. You could wake up at dawn and you could still be partying at sunset and you'd still have 4 hours left over to party into the night. This is the coolest thing we've ever seen. It's the Cool Max Cooler. This is all the music, all the partying you can handle. And by the way, that's normally $499. We got our hands on 12 of them. The first 12 customers to call, $375. You're going to be the hero of the party, the hero of the beach, the hero of the tailgating, the hero of the barbecue, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. You got it, baby. This is the best thing you've ever heard. Call 1-888 888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490, 888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Mycoolgadgets.com. Check out the Cool Max Cooler, 375. Very limited quantities. Call now.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
With the growing recognition of the power of animals to assist and comfort us people, and with greater legal protections for certified service animals under the ADA, we are seeing not only more vested animals, but more innovative and creative programs concerning service animals. One of these programs, Paws of War, is a project of the group Guardians of Rescue. I am pleased to welcome Dori Schofield, Vice President of Guardians of Rescue. Hi, Dori.
Hi, Dr. Lori. How are you?
I'm great. Dori, what is Paws of War and how did it get started?
Paws of War was originally a program within our animal rescue organization, Guardians of Rescue. And it became so successful that we branched it off as its own 501c3 organization. And what we do is we take all these amazing rescue dogs, well, not all of them, but many of these amazing rescue dogs that we rescue from kill shelters all over the country, and we train them to be service dogs for our post-9/11 veterans and sometimes for our Vietnam veterans to be service dogs for those suffering from PTSD or TBI, traumatic brain injury, PTSD. Being post-traumatic stress disorder, which is very real. They are the invisible wounds that nobody sees, but they're very real. And we match these dogs up personality-wise and task performance-wise with the individual veterans.
Okay, so you get the dogs from the shelters, so they're rescued animals, and describe mm-hmm. the process concerning the dogs from that point.
The process is we temperament test them, we house them at our shelter, which is here on Long Island, and that's when we start the process. We get to know the dogs. If the dog has the qualities that we feel would make him an impeccable service dog, we will take him into the program. We begin training. We have trainers that work with Assistance Dog International. They are qualified trainers to complete these dogs to service dog quality. And it's a long process, but we do it in a lot of different ways. We do it. We can train a dog and then match him up with a veteran. We have veterans that train with the dogs. It takes probably about 7 to 9 months to complete the training. It's a great process. It's a growing process for the dog and the veteran. I love when they work together. It just it begins the whole healing process.
Dori, how are the needy former servicemen and women identified? Do they generally know this service is available to them?
Well, we are connected with a lot of veterans organizations and, you know, just through word of mouth and veterans that go to the VAs and they have their service dog and other veterans ask, oh, my God, where did you get that dog? It's so great. And, you know, there are many of them are there for the same reasons. So word of mouth is a big part of getting the awareness out, the awareness for PTSD being a very real diagnosis. And come on, when you see a dog and a veteran, it's an immediate attraction to everybody, and they love it. And it really brings them some confidence, protection, and just that extra, you know, they got their six, as they say in the military, and these animals really do. They are there to serve and protect their veteran.
Do the former service people need to have a stable residence and enough income to care for the dogs and to feed them and pay for veterinary care?
Absolutely. We have an application process that we do just like we do for anybody that applies to adopt one of our rescue dogs. We ask all the same questions. Do you have other pets? Do you own your home? Do you have a fenced-in yard? If we have a high-energy dog, that really needs to run and have a fenced-in yard, veterinary references, we do the same background checks. We speak to their professionals, their caseworkers, their spouses, their mothers, their fathers. So we really get to know the veterans very well, and once they become part of the Paws of War family, it really is a family, Lori. We really become very connected with them.
Dory, how do we know the service dogs help the people? What do we know from research or science about how people with emotional problems like post-traumatic stress disorder benefit?
Well, we know that animals benefit anybody with depression, high blood pressure, all that has been proven. PTSD, they are doing a lot of research on it, and they're doing case studies now, right now, down in Florida, with veterans and service dogs with PTSD. So, and the outcome is amazing. The effects of an animal integrating with a human being that gives you unconditional love, is always there for you, never lets you down, doesn't care if you are overweight, in a bad mood, sad, and they will lift their spirits. They will just be such an integral part. Dogs pick up on that. They have sixth sense with anybody who's listening to your program, who is an animal lover, knows what their animal does for them. So you can only imagine what a trained dog will do for a service member who's suffering from PTSD.
So how do you determine if a veteran really would benefit from a service animal? Couldn't an untrained animal, an adoptable animal from the shelter, provide just what is needed for some of them?
For some of them, absolutely it can. And we also provide free adoptions from our shelter, Save a Pet Animal Rescue in Port Jefferson, to all our military veterans. So, again, they have to fill out an application, but if they are looking for just a pet to comfort them, to keep them company, there's no fee. All our animals are spayed, neutered, microchipped, vaccinated, tested for a heartworm. So it's win-win all around. For service dogs, for those that really have a hard time getting out into the public, going, we have some veterans that haven't been to restaurants in years or to the mall or to the grocery store. They need that extra comfort of a service dog. And that's where the Paws of War organization comes in.
And Dory, as you know, on Animals Today here, we're very concerned about the well-being of the animals. Is this a good life for the dogs? How do you choose them, and how do you know if the animals, the dogs, might enjoy something else better than serving a person?
Well, because they're not only serving that person outside of the home when they go with them to the restaurants, when they go with them to the mall, when they go on the airplane, when they go in the car. Their home being just dogs also. They're not always working. When that vest and that leash is on, they are working. But other than that, they're in the home, they're playing, they're hanging out watching TV. What better life for a dog than to be with their owner 24/7? And it's really great. I have my own dog who is my total companion. She's my soulmate. She's with me as much as possible. So this is just an extra bonus. They get to go everywhere with them.
Dory Schofield, thank you.
Here's the problem. You're at the beach, you're at the party, you're at the patio, and it's boring. Solution? The Cool Max Cooler. Imagine this, a 40-quart cooler with wheels that holds up to 48 cans and advanced insulation technology that keeps the ice frozen for up to 3 days. You heard me right. It's got wheels. You can drag it along. Maybe you're tailgating. Maybe you're having a picnic. And get this, it has a 350-watt sound system in it, baby, with tweeters and woofers built right into the cooler. You heard me right. Bluetooth, USB, SD, any form of music, it plays for you. In fact, you can karaoke if you like with 350 watts of booming power. Not only that, maybe you got a guitar. It acts as your guitar amplifier too. You are a party in a box, baby. A party in a cooler, 48 cans. It's got all the bottles, 3 days of ice. And by the way, the battery lasts up to 16 hours. You could wake up at dawn and you could still be partying at sunset and you'd still have 4 hours left over to party into the night. This is the coolest thing we've ever seen. It's the Cool Max Cooler. This is all the music, all the partying you can handle. And by the way, that's normally $499. We got our hands on 12 of them. The first 12 customers to call, $375. You're going to be the hero of the party, the hero of the beach, the hero of the tailgating, the hero of the barbecue, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. You got it, baby. This is the best thing you've ever heard. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. 888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Mycoolgadgets.com. Check out the Cool Max Cooler, $375. Very limited quantities. Call now.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS the Solutionist on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's True Reality Radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
Attention invention and gadget lovers, join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month, we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions, and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month, you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several hundred dollars or $20, $30. Every month, it's different, but we need your evaluation. And it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. We all know the features of ideal animal shelters. They have low rates of euthanasia of adoptable animals. They have high rates of adoption. They provide care to injured and sick animals. They're places where people are happy and proud to work and volunteer. They are assets to the community. How do great shelters get to be that way? Because I'll tell you, it's not easy to achieve with budget constraints, overpopulation of unwanted dogs and cats, community apathy, lack of political will, and more. How does an average shelter or a poorly performing one make real improvements to help the animals and better serve the community? One example of a vastly improved animal services department is in San Antonio. And today we're going to be speaking with Kathy Davis, who is director of the City of San Antonio Animal Care Services. Welcome to the program, Kathy.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Kathy, tell us a little bit about Animal Care Services in San Antonio. How many people it serves and the geographic area you cover?
Well, we're a fairly large city. We're the seventh largest city in the nation. We have a population in the city of 1.7 million, and we also service the county just for kenneling services, so that puts us in a couple, 2-3 million population. Annually, we take in about 30,000 dogs and cats, along with a variety of livestock, and like most shelters do. And we have 127 positions here with a department, and offer the wide range of services that you mentioned. So we do have a full-service vet clinic. We have our live release program division. We have our kenneling division, our field enforcement division, and administration that takes care of, obviously, all the things that go along with ordering the supplies that we all need to do our jobs.
Kathy, who or what oversees Animal Care Services in San Antonio's government structure? Who do you report to?
I report to an assistant city manager. So we are a standalone department, and that's really very important to make sure that this department gets the kind of attention that it needs and gets the kind of priorities taken care of that we need to do so in a government structure.
Okay, so how would you define the mission of Animal Care Services?
Our mission is very simple. It's to encourage responsible pet ownership through education, through enforcement, and through community partnership, which is a really big thing here. Community partnership is what's really made the changes in our program.
Now, let's go back a bit in time when San Antonio and this department was struggling with low live release rates and it just wasn't functioning ideally. Describe how it used to be.
Oh, I will tell you, we have had an extremely low live release rate. Actually, about 4 years ago, we were at 30% live release. So we've certainly come a long way to the 85% live release that we're sitting at now. We were overcrowding our kennels. We had many pets that were sick because of the overcrowding. We were certainly not doing a lot of things right insofar as running a top-notch shelter. And we had the reputation of being the worst shelter in the nation.
Wow. Kathy, why was it like that? How did it get to be that way, and what kept it there?
Well, the major reason why it got into that shape was for several of the reasons that you stated in your opening statement. There was much community apathy. Our government support had pretty much kicked us down at the knees. We had very little funding to do anything. It was tough to get people to come to work for us because our salaries were quite low, and the number of employees we were able to bring in had to do an awful lot of work, and they certainly didn't last long. So we had high turnover rates as well. When the community finally decided that what we were doing was unacceptable, then changes started to happen, and that's what has been part of the reason that has fueled our success rate.
So what specifically sparked the changes in Animal Care Services?
It was truly the community coming together and saying, this isn't sufficient for our pets. This is not the right thing to do for our pets, and it's time we make some substantial changes. And we've done exactly that. We've made very wholesale changes to our entire program. I've been here for 2.5 years now, and we've gone through every single department with a fine-tooth comb and made sure that we installed best practices, that we worked to install people that had the compassion to be here for the right reasons, that wanted to obviously make a difference in our humane world here, and it has really turned our department around. We have really some terrific, dedicated people that are bringing in with them other talents and other expertise to really make a difference in the people that we serve as well as the pets.
Kathy, how about financial resources? Was there a commitment of new funds for Animal Care Services?
I'm happy to tell you we're getting new funds on a regular basis. We just last week, the council approved another $350,000 for two new programs that we're working on here. Our budget has more than doubled since 2007, And that's a good thing, because obviously if you have money, you can solve more problems. I've gone to council and let them know that it does cost more to save a pet's life than it does to euthanize them.
Yeah.
And they've gotten that message, and they understand that if we're going to increase our live release rate, then we're certainly going to have to put our money where our mouth is.
So describe what the department and the community did to begin lowering the euthanasia rate.
Well, one of the biggest things that we did was to reach out to our community and start building bridges. We didn't have a very good reputation back in 2007, and it didn't really start improving until 2011. And by reaching out and by sitting down at the table and putting together partnerships that work with our rescue community, with the Humane Society, with our other rescue partners, things then started to turn around. We looked into what we could do to work more collaboratively with our rescue population, and looked at the fact that obviously, like many cities, the rescue population doesn't have a lot of money to be able to support their programs. And if they're not successful, then we're not going to be successful. So we mapped out a plan and went out and found some grant dollars and started funding our rescue organizations by paying them to take pets from us. So we pay a $50 premium on every single pet that they pull from us. And in addition, that pet already has been spay-neutered, has been microchipped, has received all of its shots, and is ready to go. So it's adoption ready when they take that pet from us. And that's helped them sustain their organizations and certainly has fueled our live release rate.
Wow, that's great. What have been the greatest challenges in effecting and sustaining real change in San Antonio shelters?
Well, like other cities, our pet owners are the ones that we're still trying to get into their hearts and minds and change those into being more humane pet owners. We still have a portion of our population that is just not quite doing the right thing with their pets. They aren't bonding with them. They are surrendering their pets on too frequent a basis. And it's those hearts and minds that we need to change in order to make our world here more humane than what it is. So what I referenced earlier, we just went back to council and asked for additional monies to put into an education program that will be a grassroots, boots on the ground, out of the neighborhoods, knocking on doors and talking to people to offer our services, to make sure that they understand the expectations and what the laws require for their pets, and to help them be better pet owners rather than just sending our animal care officers out to issue them tickets or write them up for some violation. We think that we can lead people into being better pet owners, and if we do that, it'll have a lasting impression rather than just an enforcement process.
What other programs would you like to add or grow now in the city?
Oh, my. There's so much more that I'd like to do. We just kicked off a new program that we've been struggling with for years, like many other organizations, our licensing program. Pet licensing has just not been successful for us here in San Antonio, and we've certainly looked for best practices and haven't found any. So last month we took a proposal to council, and we've decided to pitch our licensing program and instead do something that we think will have value for our citizens. The main reason that most jurisdictions do licensing is to help reunite their pets. And licensing just isn't the best way to do that. So we've decided to go to a mandatory microchipping program here. And we think that's a one-and-done program, that if you have a microchip in your pet, it accomplishes the goal that we want, which is to help you reunite with your pet should that pet get loose. And there's no annual renewal. There's no follow-up process that we have to do. As long as your pet has a chip, that works for our program. So we keep looking for those kinds of different innovative things that we can bring to our citizens that have meaning, that have value, and that don't cost a lot. In fact, we're selling our microchips for $5. That's a registered microchip because that's what it's costing us to get it from our vendor. And we think that's the right thing to do. Rather than upcharging our customers for the chip, why shouldn't we give it to them at a very reasonable price so that they will take advantage of the program, and that'll give us then the opportunity to talk to them about why their pet got loose should we end up picking it up.
Kathy, in the last few seconds, is it possible for San Antonio to become a no-kill city, meaning there are no more dogs and cats euthanized due to overpopulation?
I guarantee you that we will be there, and we are shooting to be the first large shelter, the first shelter that takes in 30,000 pets a year, to be a no-kill city. We think it's very close. We think it's within our grasp. In fact, in April, for the month of April, we were 87% live release.
Mm.
So we know that it's very close. It's on the horizon. We want to prove to the nation that it is achievable, and we know it is achievable because we're almost there.
Kathy Davis, Director of the City of San Antonio Animal Care Services, congratulations and good work on the wonderful transformation, and thanks for appearing on Animals Today.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Here's the problem: nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains. This will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil. Oil from the skin of a banana. Biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper-concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
It's storm season. Bad weather is fast approaching, and if your power goes out, you'll need a strong flashlight. And that's where the Blackout Buddy emergency flashlight begins. You'll have a powerful LED flashlight right at your fingertips when the power goes out. Now, normally, a Blackout Buddy emergency flashlight retails for $24.99. We have a special offer today. If you call right now, 1-888-877-0490, that's 1-888-877-0490, you can get two of the Blackout Buddy emergency flashlights for only $24.99. But you have to call now. Call 1-888-877-0490. When the power goes out, the Blackout Buddy comes on. It plugs directly into your wall socket for constant charging. And when the lights go out, boom, you have super bright LED lights lighting the way. Call right now. Call 1-888-877-0490. You don't get one, you get two for just $24.99. But call right now or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
This is Dave Shistokas with some very important information for business owners and nonprofit managers in the U.S. Gulf Coast area. Were you in operation at the time of the BP oil spill in April 2010? There's a very short period until June 8th to file a claim in the BP settlement. There are misunderstandings about the settlement. Organizations located well inland, unrelated to tourism or hospitality, are eligible, and there's no need to show that the oil spill was related to their damages. There's no dollar limits on claims to be paid under the settlement. BP is legally bound to pay all valid claims. Call me, Dave Shistokas, for a free evaluation of your potential claim at 312-451-5550. Any claim not filed by June 8th will be gone forever. There's no cost to find out about your eligibility at 312-451-5550 or visit shistokas.com for more. It's S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S.com. It takes time to properly prepare a claim, so quick action is critical.
Attention, invention and gadget lovers. Join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month, we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before,
and you fill out a couple questions, and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month, you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be $100 or $20, $30. Every month it's different, but we need your evaluation. And it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
A little historical milestone for you now. 8 years ago this May, the last horse slaughterhouse in the United States was closed. The plant was located in DeKalb, Illinois, and was at one point responsible for slaughtering 40,000 to 60,000 horses a year. The ban on slaughtering horses for meat in Illinois was signed by Governor Rod Blagojevich on May 24, 2007. The slaughterhouse tried to contest the ruling, but their appeal was unanimously rejected, forcing closure of the plant. Cavill, the last horse slaughterhouse, opened in 1987, had over 50 employees, and produced around $30 million a year through foreign trade because consumption of horse meat is banned in the United States. It was a pretty good business as owners of horse slaughterhouses didn't have to pay export taxes and paid very little in income taxes. But not surprisingly, these horse slaughterhouses were proven to be environmentally hazardous as well as burdens on the economy. Unfortunately, closing the slaughterhouses in the United States does not go nearly far enough to help the horses. Still, American horses are routinely shipped across the border to Canada or Mexico to be slaughtered there. Some animal rights activists believe it would be more humane to reopen slaughterhouses in order to avoid the horrifically cruel journey the horses endure as they get transported across the borders. They may travel 24 hours or more without food and water. And if that weren't enough, these helpless animals often are not afforded quick and painless deaths. They may suffer excruciating beatings to unconsciousness before killing them, but may even be conscious when killed. However, keeping the American slaughterhouses open really wouldn't help the horses that are transported across the border, as that practice was in place even when the American slaughterhouses were in operation. Also, it's interesting that horse slaughter was ever permitted in the United States, since so many Americans strongly oppose consumption of horses, and considered horses to be in the special treasured pet categories of animals, like dogs and cats. So in general, in the United States, eating the meat of horse is regarded as disgusting and taboo, whereas beef is perfectly acceptable. Weird how these things work out. Better just not to have any of them, right? So, as I have often stated, we have a lot of work to do on behalf of the horses, and indeed all animals. But 7 years ago this month, horses enjoyed a victory when their domestic slaughter for consumption was finally ended in the United States. Okay, everybody, the hot weather's coming. I want to play for you now a story from a few years ago.
Then I started to think about the time when I was with a friend at a shopping mall. True story here. And some of you living here in Palm Springs for several years may have heard about this one. My friend and I came across a dog left in a car in the middle of the summer here in Palm Springs. And those of you who know, who live here in the Coachella Valley, know how hot it gets here in the summertime. I mean, it must have been 110 that day. And unless you're really an idiot, then you know that you can't leave your dog in the car on a hot day. Actually, it's illegal to leave your dog in a car in Palm Springs any time of year because of the unexpected and big swings of temperatures. But anyways, here it is, 110 degrees, and there's a dog in the car. The windows are barely cracked, and we all know that does a lot of good, right? On a hot day, you might as well leave the windows all the way up. So one of us, and I'm not going to admit which one on the air, but maybe some of the listeners that know me can guess which one. One of us broke the car window with a special device one of us has in the trunk of our car. Now, don't worry. This is a really good ending. People who know me know that I don't often tell or like to hear animal stories with bad or sad endings. As we broke the window of the car, we grab this heat-stricken, almost dead dog from the car. Out comes the guy who owns the car and owns the dog, okay? Remember, great ending for the dog, although he was hospitalized for dehydration with heat stroke and actually almost did die. At this moment that I'm speaking right now, he's healthy, happy as a lark right now in his new wonderful home. But my point is, this guy could not care less about the dog. He did not say one word about us taking his dog. I mean, it's incredible. If you saw someone snatching your dog, wouldn't you say or do something about the dog? Okay? He didn't. However, he did try to get the police to charge us for vandalizing his car, which we were guilty of, but we weren't charged. But wait, it gets better. And this is actually the funny part. The guy was so pissed off that we broke his car window that he started screaming at us, calling us nasty names that I can't really say on the air here, but saying what a horrible thing we did by breaking his car window, and he's going to sue our big fat, you know what, and trying to draw attention so people will be mad at us and side with him as we're running away with his dog. So now there's this huge guy watching this entire event, as it did draw quite an audience. This guy must have weighed 300 pounds and sort of the tough-looking type. You know, he had a couple tattoos on his arms and neck and earrings in his face and his body hair poking out of his tank top. This guy calmly goes right up to the guy screaming at us and calling us nasty names. He bends down, pulls something out of his pant pocket, and slashes the guy's back tire, and then turns to us with this big, beautiful smile on his face and gives us the thumbs up sign, and then he calmly walks away. True story.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows and where you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com, or you can listen on iTunes. Also, make sure to like us on Facebook and join the discussion. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit them at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animals, how we treat them, and their place in society, while promoting greater respect and kindness towards them. So thanks for your support. That website again is aianimals.org, and thanks for listening. Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org.